Okay, and welcome back from whatever your meal was. We're at Microsoft Virtual Academy. This is exam 70484. It's the essentials of building a store app with C# and XAML. Refresh for Windows 8.1. I'm Jerry Nixon. I'm here with Darren. Did you have a good lunch, Darren?
I did. Did you?
No.
No?
I did, actually. I did, actually. It seemed so obvious to say yes to that. Perfect. So in the previous three sessions, we talked about all the fundamentals of XAML.
Yep.
Really quite a bit of stuff there.
Yeah.
A little bit of the platform itself, talking about design and things like that. Now we want to go into design features. So we are here. This is Module 4, Implementing Platform Features, Part 1. We really broke it up, right? We didn't come up with clever names.
We wanted to come up with really imaginative titles that kind of led you through.
Okay, well, what are we going to talk about?
So in this particular module, we're going to be looking at the search contract, the share contract, and the settings contract. And so these are really core to some of the foundational experiences that you're going to want to incorporate into your application. Mm-hmm. And it's part of the capability that the Windows App Store environment or platform makes available for you.
These are special for developers because they haven't had to think like this before.
Mm-hmm.
We've always had search and we've always had settings, but not like this.
Yeah.
And this is really specific to Windows 8, the way that it implements these. And let's just dive right in. We'll start with the search contract. So actually, let's go straight to slide 84 here. We are going to be talking about the search contract now.
Mm-hmm.
Very explicit. Exactly. All right, good. Want to make sure it's easy to create those time slots. All right. The search contract in Windows 8 is where we should start, even though it's not what we're doing now. I like to start there because a lot of developers may be coming from that perspective. If you're a Windows 8 developer, you know that we call it the search contract because you ask to be part of the system-wide search. It used to be that you would swipe open the charms, select the search charm, and you would search your app from there.
Yeah, you'd be scoped to the app there, but you could also search elsewhere, which was kind of the interesting part of that.
Yeah, it was very clever, but it just turns out that that wasn't as discoverable as we hoped it would be.
Mm-hmm.
So now in 8.1, we're changing the recommendation to not have search outside of your app, but instead now to include it on your canvas.
Yeah, put it front and center, really expose to your user that your application supports some deep context search.
That's right. So search is a lot more discoverable when you're looking right at it,
mm-hmm.
as it turns out.
Funny enough.
How do we accomplish that to make sure everybody implements search in a somewhat reasonable way that's always the same, gives functionality that is consistent from app to app? We do that with a new control introduced in 8.1 called the search box.
Mm-hmm.
And the search box is a simple control, honestly.
Yep.
It's very simple control. Is it complex enough to search my data, Darren?
Nothing about the search contract or the search control will actually search your data for you. It provides an infrastructure that you have to implement in order to search your content itself. Fundamentally, it just exposes up the user's intent to search. You have to service that search intent.
That's right. So no matter what you do as far as including the contract, which is no longer necessary, or including the search box now in your app, you still have to search your own data.
And that's a key point that you mentioned there, that the search contract, although no longer necessary, still does exist.
Mm.
You can still leverage it, and there may be some scenarios where it makes sense in terms of if you're creating a whole bunch of content on your file system, that could be a scenario where you want to leverage the search contract.
Yeah.
But in the main, you're going to be implementing this type of search in your application.
That really is the edge case now. It used to be that was the main scenario of to be able to implement that. Now it's a way edge case, decimal point edge case, like not 1%, but maybe half of 1%. Okay, what is the search box? It is a new UI control, and it has the same capabilities of the search pane in Windows 8. The first one is as you're typing, you have...
History.
You have history, that's right. It's remembering what you typed before, and it's helping you along because it thinks you want to type that again. Another thing that you have is as you're typing, not only does it show you the history of what you typed before, but it also is guessing for you, saying, this is the data that I have. It looks like you might be trying to type this.
Yep.
And all of those, of course, are not implemented by the search box itself.
Yes.
This is your data.
You have to respond to the opportunity to provide those suggestions.
That's right. That's right. You provide the suggestions and just give it to the search box to show. And then there's one extra thing, which is pretty cool, really. Mm-hmm. It's the query, the results suggestion.
Yeah.
And so the results suggestion says, here's a perfect match. This is exactly, this might
be. Here's a quick hit.
Yeah, this might be exactly
what you
want.
It's almost like, do you feel lucky?
Yeah, exactly. It kind of is like that, where I might select one of the query suggestions, and it immediately queries using my query suggestion. But if I select a result suggestion, it doesn't query. Mm-hmm. It'll go directly to that result instead. It's nice. And depending on how the developer implemented result suggestions, it can save a lot of time for the user.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There are some integration points. Excellent.
Yeah.
There are some integration points that were to the global search and now are identical to the search box. It will raise an event saying suggestions requested, which is going to be based on how the user is interacting with the search box. You don't have to think about how they are. Just mm-hmm. know that they want it.
Yep.
That suggestion requested then allows you to go back to your data and look for matches, which could be very expensive.
So it's supplying you with what the user has entered thus far
into the search box. You get a partial query text.
So you get a partial query, and you can leverage that and do whatever makes sense in the context of your application to start generating suggestions.
Yeah.
Say you've got a title and detail. You might start prompting up titles that match and so on and so forth.
And I think it's important that figuring out some sort of suggestion for the user could be costly as far as performance.
Yep.
And as a result, you don't actually want to respond to every suggestion requested mm-hmm. event that's raised, because if I'm typing in the word Mississippi, that's a lot of letters that are going to be coming to me. The event is going to be raised very, very quickly. I want to somehow throttle that back so that I don't kill my back-end system at the same time mm-hmm. querying for every letter in Mississippi and for the 100,000 users of my app that are also typing in Mississippi. Now I've totally destroyed with a denial of service to my own system.
Yeah, so how typically would you implement throttling?
Well, there's a low-end way and a high-end way. And the mm-hmm. low-end way would perhaps, this is a sloppy, terrible way that doesn't scale very well. But you could keep the timestamp, look at the link, mm-hmm. see what they typed last time, all these things that you have to manage and maintain. It's painful and probably a brittle solution as well, mm-hmm. but it's probably where a lot of developers start, right?
Yeah.
They're like, I don't want to query too much, so I'm going to whatever.
Yeah.
But we already have a system, a framework that's in place that developers can use to do just this and solve just this problem, and it's the reactive extensions.
Mm-hmm.
Reactive extensions is basically the ability to take a stream of events that are flowing, such as this suggestions requested that happens,
mm-hmm.
but instead of responding to it with a handler, we treat it instead like an enumerable. And then inside that enumerable, we can set up rules with throttling, as well as repetition and sampling and all kinds of things inside it. So we're not going to demonstrate that, but I think it's worth mentioning that...
The reactive extensions are a significant contribution to solutions development, and it's not something that we can really dive into in any depth as part of this, but it's one of the interesting things is link is the ability to query uh-huh. on an existing collection, and reactive extensions really allow you to query on future collections, which I think is...
as they come.
Yes.
It's like rules.
It's set up rules on how you're going to handle something in the future, and so there is plenty of other resources out there around that, and maybe that's something at some point in the future we get a chance to look at it.
Nothing as awesome as Link. Of course, that's also, nothing as awesome as reactive extensions, and that's also available to WinJS developers mm-hmm. as well if they want it. It's also an open source project.
Yeah.
Absolutely mind-boggling that it's open source, but nonetheless it is. There it is.
Awesome.
There's an event of query submitted when the actual query is executed or requested to be executed.
Yep. I.e. somebody's hit enter or the submit button.
And then we also have this Search Suggestions Manager. It's a static class that, it turns out it's not a static class.
Yeah.
It's a instantiable class. Oh, what do you say? Non-static. Non-static,
instance.
Maybe. It's an instance class. Is that
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
That has a method of clear history. And so that search history that the user has and you help them with, there are scenarios where the user might want to clear that history because it's cluttering up the results. And this is where you do it in that Search Suggestion Manager. So let me just jump to a scenario here inside Visual Studio. We have a sample set up that's pretty straightforward. And I can kind of talk through some of the pain points to implement something like this, right? A search is just a complicated thing. It doesn't have anything to do with what platform you're on.
That really is a good point to make out. That the reality is when you're designing your application, you really need to think about the search scenarios
for
the data and really consider how you're going to move through that, because it may change the way you structure your data. It may change the way that you want to present it to the users, mm-hmm. because you need to consider typical presentation plus presentation in terms of search results.
Yeah, that's right. And they won't usually be the same because then you'll start to have to invent some new gestures in order to handle it. So let me step back for just a second on whether or not you need search in the first place. Inside Windows 8 in any application, one of the recommendations is that the default sort order of the data that you have isn't alphabetical, can be, isn't by anything other than relevance. So mm-hmm. this is a new, usually there's not a relevant property on your data. This is something that it's a computer science problem that developers have to solve, mm-hmm. figuring out the data and how it's relevant, not just relevant in general, but relevant for you versus mm-hmm. relevant for me.
Yep.
It will actually have a different sort order, and hopefully the records at the initial part of the repeater will be the most interesting to me and not require as many searches. So that's the first step, is you probably will need a search depending on your data, but you can reduce the number of searches just by having smart sort orders, especially using relevance. Great. Not just recent, by the way.
Yes.
Relevance is very special. Okay, so here's a simple application. It has two pages in it. The first page is, you're seeing it right now, this is the hub. It just shows a list of colors and allows me to search for the colors. So it's just a simple grid view like we demonstrated before, and it's just a repetition of all the different colors in their text. But then I've added the text box right here in the top right. That's the go-to guideline of where to put your text box. And so you can see it's down here at the bottom of my XAML, and the fact that I have it at the bottom of the outline means that it has the z-index at the top. So that's kind of where I want it to be in the first place. And so here it is, right where I want it to be. The user can go there and type, and it's a consistent place for them to go and have it. But just like we saw in the Mail app, it doesn't have to be here. Just suit, you know, we want to suit your
within the context of this application, it makes perfect sense.
Right, probably in the context of majority of applications.
Yeah, because you're taking that whole screen to present this particular piece of data.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, right. as you say, in the email scenario, we have those different segments of
right, and it would only be confusing to have it in that one location, right? So don't let the guidelines ruin your app.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so simple enough, not much functionality, just a list of colors. I can go up into the box, and I don't have anything yet. And so immediately I have a couple helpful pieces showing up. Two things that have shown up, Aquamarine and Aqua, both show up. Neither of them are provided by my application. Both of them are provided because I typed this before when I was playing with the demo earlier.
So it's just history.
This is just my history of searches. However, I do go ahead and have exact matches showing. So that word exact match is something I typed in. It doesn't have to say exact match. But I added a separator, and then below it I had two things that match. And what it really is doing is pulling from the top two. So it's using blank and just taking the top two. And if you look over at the data, pale violet, red, and antique white are the top two, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as I start to type AQUA, as I start to type, you can see medium aquamarine showed up. That wasn't there before.
Mm-hmm.
And aquamarine is here as well. Both of those are query suggestions. So I select those, it'll fill into the search box and then submit it for me.
So the great thing as well to point out here is that that's a very rich presentation of those query suggestions. You know, it's actually showing not just text, it's actually bringing in the visualization related to those.
Yeah, that's right. Especially down here in exact match where I pass in the image and I can even have secondary lines. Mm-hmm. So I give it a little bit more information. And here you can see it's also highlighting the aqua but leaving the marine. So you can see kind of the relationship of why it's showing up there. So if I go ahead and select that, which I'll do, it will raise the query submitted event, and that query submitted event will then navigate. And this is important because there's a couple ways to do it, and I think this will probably be the typical use case. And so it will navigate to my search results page. So this is a two-page app. This mm-hmm. is the second page. It goes to the search results page, and you can see it's searched and shown only the data for aquamarine and medium aquamarine. But it also gives me the ability to search again. Now I could go up and say some version of blue, and as I go into blue and search, it will navigate again. And so each one is a navigation back to the same page, which means a back navigation goes to the previous search. Now this is going to be a scenario that you're going to have to think through on your own. Every developer will have a different solution for it, because sometimes you don't want the back to go to the previous search. Sometimes you want the back to go home.
Yes.
Yeah. And so it's going to be up to you how you do it. I think this is probably the most common scenario of every search then generates
it's certainly the
another
easiest
item.
Scenario.
Yeah, that's for sure. You don't have to work hard at all.
You don't have to work hard at all. But you need to think, as you say, you know, if you've done 20 searches back to back, it can be somewhat tedious to click back 20 times to come through.
That's right.
You may want to consider that usage scenario and provide a shortcut.
That's right. So now back, you're right. Back can really get exhausting. I select one of them, and there it is. So that I show that on purpose because if I click one of these colors, it simulates that I would load, in this case, dark violet. Now, if I go up here and I go and I start searching for violet, of course, it gives me all the possible query searches here. Not all of them. In fact, I should point out there's only room for five.
You've got five elements in total or five suggestions?
I'm glad you said that. There are five elements in total plus the history. So it's a little bit vague right there. But basically, the idea is I have these three that are supplied as query suggestions. Mm-hmm. And then I have a exact match right here. But the exact match line itself is an item that takes up space. So I can only have so many. Let me think. I don't know what the limit is. I think it's very high now. I think it's 20.
Yeah.
20 items that I can have in there. But what happens is once it gets to a certain height, it starts to scroll inside it. So you just have to ask yourself whether or not you like the way that
works. Is
that
really intelligent? Yeah.
Yeah. And so I tend to limit to five. Mm-hmm. So if I were to, again, if I were to select one of these query suggestions, it would put it up into the search box and then submit it for me, but that's not what I want to do. I want to go down and select violet, and it will not put it in the search box for me and submit it. Instead, it will do the same operation as if I tried to select one of them from the grid directly. That's because I'm not asking for a search. I think that I found it actually using the search suggestions as a way of filtering rather than going to the search demo or the search results page. Make sense?
Yep.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. And then it's up to me how rich this is. I don't have to include that little summary image. Mm-hmm. Sometimes data just doesn't have an image.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a reality to
it. Why don't you show us how you implemented this?
Yep, don't mind if I do. So the search box itself really has almost no implementation, right? So I just decide where it's going to go and leave it from there.
So drag and drop and it's done.
Drag and drop and it's done. It's up to you where the placement goes. But yeah, that's partly true. But if you want it to do something, then let me drop to code behind here. It's up to you then to also, let me go here, there we are, to handle the different events. So first one I'll handle is the suggestions requested. This is a combination of suggestions requested and results requested. And so in this one event, I would provide back to the user both of them, if it's possible, right? It all has to do with timing and cost. And then the query submitted itself is the event where I want to navigate to the search results and pass in whatever the query string was. And then finally, there's the result selection, the result suggestion chosen event. So that's when the user goes
just
to the bottom.
Just rolls off the tongue.
Blah, 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 blah. Exactly. And you go all the way to the bottom. The user's chosen it. And then you want to do something that is not a search.
Yeah.
It's actually loading a record, right? So I kind of cheated. This is just a demo, but it's all right. In this case, the search suggestion requested is raised, and then I go into my view model, and it generates and handles the way it should be. And so we'll look at that right now. I'll hit F12 to jump to it. You can see now, again, this is not logic that's right for your application, Darren. This is just right for mine. Everybody searches their data in a different way because it might be in SQL, it might be a web service, it might be a file, it might be who knows where.
Yep.
And you have to do it your own way. This is how I do it for this. In this case, I create a list of result suggestions, and then from there, I create a list of query suggestions, and then I start appending them. And then really, the trick is, right here, I append my query suggestions as easy as E, which is the event args passed in, .request.search suggestion collection, .append query suggestions. How about that?
Yeah.
And then that same collection, I can say append search separator. That's that one line, and you can see I passed in a string right here of exact match, which is terrible when you think about localization, right? It's a hard-coded English word that wouldn't work when I go to France. And so then the final one is to put in any result suggestions that I have. In this case, I've got a certain number that's limited by logic that I have in the top part of the method.
Yeah, and to touch on that constant for a second, you know, we obviously have facility to use resources and so on, and we'll touch on that a little bit later in terms of localization and how to provide up translations and those things.
That's right. In fact, a little bit later would be module 2 tomorrow.
Yep.
Just to be not later today.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, it's as easy as that, and it's just interacting with this search suggestion collection and adding whatever it is you need. And here, of course, adding result suggestion is nice and rich, where you can add more than just a string if you want to. All right, so job is done right there. Then it's up to me to handle queries submitted. What happens there? In this case, I'm using the frame to navigate to the search result and passing in EDUC query text. That's the event args giving me whatever it was the user typed or selected as a query suggestion. So I think it's worth going into the search results page and seeing how we handle it on navigated too.
So you mentioned the search results page. How did you create that?
The search so there's two ways to do it. One way, which is not the way I do it, is to say add new item, and it brings up the new item dialog. And right here in the, if I filter it down to Windows Store only, down here at the bottom is, here it is, search results page, right? Mm-hmm. And honestly, this is great. It gets you started if you don't know what you're doing, if you don't know where to begin. This is really good. You know, take a few minutes and reverse engineer how they want you to do it, and maybe this suits all of your needs. I can build a page from scratch a lot faster than I can reverse engineer somebody else's. And I have a different style than they have. There's a million different reasons why I might not want to use it. This is a great starting point for developers who don't know. Yeah, I really do think so. I just created a brand new blank page and went from there. And so every page has an override of onNavigated2. The event args of onNavigated2 are what the user has passed into that for navigation. So I can go here and I can say, in this case, I'm changing it to say searching for args.parameter. The parameter is that string that I'm passing in. And in this case, because I know it's a string, I can say .toString. But you know, again, this is an object, so I've got to make sure I can
cast. In theory, plenty of things you could do as or is to kind of work out what it was.
What do you think about passing objects when you're navigating from page to page in Windows 8 versus passing a string?
Well, I mean, objects, in theory, give you the ability to pass much richer information. It does require you to obviously have the assumptions to do verification and validation. Yeah. But I think sometimes people fall into the trap of thinking that they can pass around very rich, very complex objects. And the reality is that object type is still somewhat constrained to be a pretty simple object.
Yeah.
The other thing to bear in mind is that's usually one of the things you're going to persist when you're saving state in your suspension. So again, you don't want necessarily to be passing around your entire data collection that you're bringing in. You want to really be passing around key information around the detail view that you're going to show or whatever, so that that can be pulled back from your state persistence and then used to index into your richer data source.
Yep, that's right. In fact, it's confusing to me that if you look at it, it is type R, it is type object. I don't think it should be. It should be type string and require you to do strings so that when you pull out the state of the frame and its navigation for suspension, it'll always work. Because right now, if you're if you don't know this problem and you put in your objects and you try and suspend your state and navigation, it'll simply fail.
Yeah, it's too bad.
You know what, MSDN says this. If you look at the specifications, it says only use a string. What they should have done is also fixed it in the API so you can only use a string. But this is a way to do a down and dirty app too, so you don't have to have a whole bunch of ways to do it. All right, so here we are. I just navigated to it. I've set the page title. Now it has its own search box, so I want to handle those basically the same way. And then I want to tell the view model to go ahead and search. So this has a view model just like my previous page had a view model. They're separate in this case. And this has a method that I created called search, where I pass the arguments in so that it knows the context and can search and find the right colors for us. It's easy as that. That search algorithm, I'm not even going to show it to you because I don't want it to be confusing to think that I search is the way you should search.
And there's no real value in understanding how you search your colors.
Yeah, that's right. There's no value at all. That's right. Anyway, so there it is. And you might be tempted, as I was, to search in place. So that mean I was looking at the first page, and I start, as the user starts typing, I start whittling down all the records that are there. That's fine. It's totally fine. There's nothing wrong with that, except you will need to come up with some sort of mechanism, some sort of, I don't know, some visual to allow them to go back to all the other records.
You know, to clear your search and so on. And we kind of discussed this a little bit as we were putting this demo together in terms of how we would do this strategically. And really what we settled on was that ultimately we want to go back to the full result, which is why bringing in the back button and navigating back from that search result seemed the most natural way to do it.
Yeah. As we did some investigation on how some of the first party apps do the same thing, that's how they do it. They mm-hmm. always navigate you out to a search results page and then allow you to come back to the view you were at originally.
Yeah.
So that's a type to search, by the way. And it can be very cool. It can be very cool. I don't want to undermine the fact that it can be really neat. Just know that what the search box doesn't have is the ability to say, go back.
Yeah.
You're going to have to come up with a button or some sort of way for the user to get back to all the results.
Yeah, there's no automatic way to clear.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. Which is a shame.
It is a shame.
Yeah, we were kind of lamenting that earlier.
Yeah.
All right, so that's the search contract.
Search contract. Well, yeah. The next contract that we're going to look at is the share contract.
The share contract. The share contract is special because apps must share in order to communicate.
Yeah, it's really one of your key integration points with other applications. You know, yes, we can call web services. If you could show my slides, please. If you can integrate out with other web services and so on and share information through a third-party system, but the only way that you can communicate with other applications installed locally within the sandbox that you're presented as part of an App Store app is via the share contract.
Well, let me back you up because you said sandbox, and this is one of the key things mm-hmm. in Windows 8. If you write an application that runs on, say, the desktop, it can just call out and talk to another desktop app. It can call out and talk to a service that's running locally. That is not the way it works in Windows 8. Mm-hmm. If you want to talk to another application, there is no way to do it. I mean, just start with that because you're inside a sandbox that's a wall higher than you can jump, basically.
Yeah.
And you can't ask the system if another app is installed. You can't ask the system if another app is running. You can't ask the system in any way to talk to another app until you get to the share contract.
Yeah. I was just thinking about that. We call it a sandbox. It's more like a pit of doom, isn't it?
Yeah. Can you imagine your kids playing in a sandbox like that? They're going to die.
That's not really friendly.
It's kind of like the Rancor.
Okay.
Here we go. So here's a good slide. This is beautiful.
Yep.
So behind the box on the right, you're in your Photos application mm-hmm. looking at pictures of your family or whatever it is, and you decide that you want to share these or email these to grandma or whoever. So you select the ones that you want, and then, in fact, swipe over from the right for just a second. You swipe from the right to reveal your... Yeah, go ahead. To reveal your charms.
Yep.
Right? And so here are the charms. You have all the different ones. They represent the contracts we're talking about in this module. The top one is search. The second one is share. The share is the one that makes the most sense here. You say share, and as soon as it does, the operating system queries against all the apps that are installed to see if any of them can receive from the application you're sharing from. So there's two directions for share to go.
So how does the operating system know that those apps can receive your content?
That is truly the share contract. I go into the app manifest, which is the configuration file for all apps built for Windows 8. Mm-hmm. I go into the app manifest and I explicitly say this is a share contract. A share target, sorry. Mm-hmm. That means I can receive something. Now, I can't just receive anything. In fact, let's go to the next slide and I'll show you what we mean. When I share out, I share different types of data. Mm-hmm. Right? So I have a payload.
Yep.
Why would I change payload? Why wouldn't I just share one type no matter what?
Because you might want to include rich formatting. You might have different types of applications that are going to share this particular piece of information in different ways. You know, if you want to share out an image, mm-hmm. then you might want to upload that to, say, an Instagram service or something along those lines. You know, it's local to your device. You want to post it somewhere. That's a different class of applications than perhaps you've got a document. Mm-hmm. You don't want to put that up in Instagram.
Yeah, that's right. And sharing out with this specific type of payload allows me to filter the receiving mm-hmm. app as well, so I don't show everything that can receive anything, even the ones that don't want the type of payload that you have.
Yeah.
So if I'm sharing out a hyperlink, then it only shows things that can actually do something with a hyperlink. Yeah, that's exactly right. On down there, so I can share a text, I can share a link, I can share HTML, I can share an image, I can share files. Mm-hmm. Those are all things you might be able to guess. But then I can also share a schemaed object, so a specific rich complex object in a specific schema. And basically what I'm saying is I'm going to share out, let's say it's an invoice. I'm going to share out an invoice, and I only want to share to an application that can receive an invoice. Now I don't accidentally mail an invoice when that's inappropriate, right? I want to go out to my billing system, which is a share target of invoice schema. Mm-hmm. And so now when I share out, the only thing I can share to is... my billing system, perfect. That's a nice integration point. Now, sharing is special because sharing does not allow one application to talk to another. I may be the invoicing system. You may be the billing system. I have this payload. I can't actually hand it to you because the reality is that would violate the fundamental principles of Windows 8 of allowing us to
talk. All I say is that this is available should anybody want to take it.
That's right. Then you hand it off to, I guess, the operating system.
Yep.
It's the broker that says, I've taken it from him. I'm ready to hand it to you. Here it is. Go. And so we never actually talk to one another.
Yep.
We allow the operating system to do everything for us.
And I have no idea who took it as an application.
Yeah. Yeah, it is possible that you wouldn't have any idea of who accepted it. Mm-hmm. There is a possibility that the receiving app could send back an acknowledgement. One of the ways that it could do it is that final piece of that payload type is through a delegate operation. So I could have a delegate operation that says, I would like to share out an invoice. However, an invoice takes a full 20 seconds for me to generate. I have to go get a bunch of things. Mm-hmm. I have to provision a bunch of things. But I'm ready, and I'll share out to you. Now, as I share out, I change my mind, and I'm not going to share after all.
Yeah.
Well, I just went through 20 seconds of provisioning to get that stupid invoice that now has just been thrown into the trash. So instead, I'll use a delegate command. And so it's like sharing an invoice, but it's not a real invoice. So I hand it to you as a token, and you say, I've received your invoice, invoke, basically.
Yeah.
And that is when the 20 seconds will happen. Mm-hmm. My application, which does all the work, receives the delegate invocation, processes and creates the invoice, and you get the full one after the time is up. That's a great way to kind of offload work as well.
Yep. Sounds good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So here we have an example of the share source code base.
Which is the easiest of all. Sharing out is a breeze. Sharing in is work.
Yeah, it's a lot more challenging. So what we have here is, in effect, we have an event that gets raised. Raised in the application that says data has been requested. So imagine the scenario. You've swiped in from the right-hand side. Mm-hmm. You've selected share. Mm-hmm. You've selected something that you want to share with. That will then cause the data requested event to be raised in your application. First things first, we grab a deferral. We've kind of discussed that previously. That effectively says, this may take some time.
Bear with us. Wait just a second. Let me think about that. You swipe open the charms, and then I hit share. It's at that moment that the data requested event is raised.
Because we need the type.
Because the type hasn't been specified
yet. You're exactly right. We have the deferral. We have an asynchronous operation that says get data. Mm-hmm. So part of the reason for hanging on to the deferral is this is not a blocking operation.
Right.
You know, it's asynchronous, so this will stop or will return processing to the caller. Everything else will carry on until such times as our get data method returns. Then it will continue processing this activity.
That's right.
Once we have our payload sorted out, we then say deferral is complete. And that's then available, and as you pointed out, has then turned around and said, as we can see here, we've created HTML format. So we've turned around and said we have a payload of HTML, made it available for consumption.
Now, unlike suspension, where you get a deferral and say, please just hang on, I got to do a little bit of work, the suspension will just cut you off. But share is a little more friendly. You'll get a little dot, dot, dot in the dialogue as it's waiting. And so you have the time you need to generate that share source payload. However, nothing's to stop the user from closing the share dialogue and just moving on. So don't go splitting the atom.
Exactly.
Yeah, if that's a good, I don't know if that's a good analogy at all. So just like we said, file new item, and we selected new search result, you could also say file new item, new share contract target.
Yep, and so this is going to start adding in the baseline plumbing to support this as a target.
And it uses a flyout that comes over from the side. It's very nice. Mm-hmm. Certainly something you could code yourself. This just gives you a good starting point.
Yes.
I have to say, I have created share targets so infrequently that I would actually go here and use this, even if I'm not the kind of guy who would use templates.
Yep.
Because it would get me down the road that I would probably forget a step or two.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Should we demo something like this?
Yeah, do you want to bring up the app?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've written a pretty groovy little app. I don't mind saying so myself. We call it Scratchpad. It's just a sample app that shows off different things so that you can kind of see and have fun with it.
Yeah, pretty much everything that we've covered thus far and we'll cover through the rest of the day is implemented actually within the context of this app.
Mm-hmm. As we put together all the source code and make it available for this course, obviously this is going to be included in it. It's a simple enough one. The idea is it's sort of like it's OneNote. It's a competitor to OneNote.
Not a very strong competitor to OneNote.
We're putting Office out of business right here. All right, so all of these just represent the ability to type inside some sort of tabbed or topicked text. It's a text box and a text block. I mean, it's not all that much.
Yeah.
Right, and so you go in, edit all you want, and as you do, it also handles suspension, so we can demonstrate suspension that way. The search box is implemented as well, but we're here to talk about share.
Yes.
All right, so here's mathematics. And I'd like to share all these beautiful notes that I've been taking about mathematics. Mm-hmm. And I want to share this out. Walk me through the consumer steps, and then we'll talk about the technology.
Yep, absolutely. So we want to share that. So we're going to swipe in from the right-hand side. We're going to hit share.
All right.
As we mentioned, we're going to start generating our payload around the what it is we're going to share. We're going to turn around and surface up what types of shares payload we're going to provide. So in this case,
it's simple HTML.
I think we actually create both text and HTML. So any target that handles either text or HTML.
That actually increases the number of targets that I have. Of course, I have one. my machine doesn't have much installed. But in this case, it's email. So if I were to select email, it'll go ahead and launch a flyout of email right here.
Yeah.
Right? And you have provided some nice HTML formatted beautifully, I don't mind saying.
It's stunning.
Yeah, you've done a great job. It takes that, pastes it right into my email for me. I could have passed in images and all kinds of other things to make this as rich as I need to for my application. And I also have this is the title, and so you pass all kinds of metadata.
Metadata associated with that, yes.
And at this point, the Scratchpad is still running.
Mm-hmm.
It's still fully functional, but it has no idea what just happened to its payload.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Now, it's been shipped off into the ether, and the operating system has handled marshalling it from that context into the target application.
Also at this point, my mail application is also running.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not full screen. It's only showing this one flyout because this is how share is handled. But the reality is if I were to debug and step into my mail application, the entire app is ready to go.
And so when we talked earlier about kind of stacks of cards and applications that are running and in the foreground and so on and so forth, this is an additional startup state for your application.
Mm-hmm.
That is obviously managed by the operating system and the environment. By virtue of declaring yourself as a share target, this capability gets incorporated into your application.
That's right. And I can, at this point, it really is just a piece of email. I can go in here and, I can make changes to it anywhere that I want to. I could delete it. You don't control it anymore from Scratchpad. Now it's just an email and I can do with it whatever I would do inside my email. I say send here, but I don't have to. I could just tap out of it. And it goes back to your application Scratchpad, and that email is lost, right?
Yep.
There's no recovery to that. This is the way the workflow works. If I wanted to send it again, I would go through the same process.
Yep, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Seems so easy.
Seems straightforward.
Honestly, it is easy. Let me show some of the code here. So here's the application. It's wide open. I have a couple of views. This is such a simple little app that really doesn't have very many views at all. Let me close the ones that we do have, close all documents. I'll open up the main page so that you can see what's there. We have nice design time experience with design data. It's really great. Not that we're as awesome as we're saying. What kind of control house is this, by the way? Did we use the hub control for this?
I believe we used the hub control, and then did we put a grid view inside it?
That's what we did, yeah. So we used the hub control for the basic layout, making sure that the header is in the right place. And then we simply have a repeater right here. I think it's just an items control that repeats to have all the different text boxes to show every piece of every record that we have.
Yep.
Simple enough, right? In fact, that's the command bar at the bottom. And here's the hub that we used. Here's the header to make sure that it's laid out the right place. Here's that first section with the items control that repeats for every note. Easy enough. But how do we share? We share by, I'll go to the code behind here. And we share by using, my brain just forgot where it is. Is
sharing
it?
Service. Open up services.
Yeah, but don't we fire up the service right here?
Is it in the...
Well, maybe it must be an AppXAML. No, it wouldn't be an AppXAML, would it? How did we do this?
Isn't it on the window create? On window update?
It is on window create, isn't it? Yes, that's exactly right. All right, all the way down to the bottom. Thank you. No, that's not where it is at all. No. Well, it is possible to share, right?
Have a look in main view model,
you
line 28.
You know that it's in the view model. Why would I do it in code behind?
Yeah.
Duh, of course.
Line 28.
Sitting right here in the view model where it should be, which is good to say because this is an operating system operation.
Yep.
It's not something specific to the page at all. So there's no reason it needs to be tied to the code behind. You could have it right here. Oh, my goodness. All right, line 128, you said. Here.
28.
Just line 28, right?
Yeah, that's where we create the instance of the sharing service.
Perfect. So a sharing service, this is not the actual share contract. Mm-hmm. This is an abstraction that we've created.
Indeed, and it allows us to share this across multiple view models, mm-hmm. should we so wish. In this particular instance, we're actually just leveraging it within this particular view model, but it's starting to establish a pattern of reuse for these things.
Yeah, I think it's a really handy thing for us to provide to the students of this course so that they can see how MVVM services at least start, right? This is somewhat rudimentary, but not bad. So I have a services folder right here, and I expand that out. There's a lot of different things it has, including right here, the sharing service. You can take a look at how it works, but what it's doing is it's waiting for that data requested event that you talked about in the mm-hmm. slide, right? That data requested event is raised by the operating system, and once it's raised, what do we do? Well, back to our view model, what we do is we call the method called shareCharm, nothing yep. else. ShareCharm is right here inside this view model. I'll scroll down just a little so I can find it. And here it is. It's a short little thing. And the data package itself, which is part of the event handler that's raised, is the thing that we set, basically.
Yeah.
You know, we have that title, the payload, things like that. It's very simple in this one, in this example. But you can see we set the title right here, sharing note dash, and then the actual title of whatever the note was, in this case, mm-hmm. mathematics. And then we set the text, like you said, just plain text. And then we also have set the HTML format, which is not plain HTML. Mm-hmm. It's a special, it's not special HTML. It's HTML that has a header with it.
Yeah.
And in fact, let me go to this method right here, which is called HTML format. I'll hit F12 just so you can see that it builds simple enough HTML. It's nothing special, but it does call this one thing that the HTML format helper. That's built into the framework. That's not something of ours. Mm-hmm. All it does is add the required header to your HTML so that it can be shared as HTML. That doesn't do anything special, just a little bit of text at the top of it. You probably could do it by yourself, but what a pain.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so, you know, this has gotten me a dozen times.
Forgetting to do that.
I forget to do this.
Exactly.
I'm like, is this not perfect HTML? It is every time, and it's because of this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, that's it. There's just a handful of lines here. When you handle it, you just set it and go. You must have the title. That's another little caveat.
That's a required one.
That's the only required one.
Yeah.
In fact, that's the only one we're setting, so we're good to go. Now we've done it. This is the share out. Like we said at the beginning, sharing as a source mm-hmm. is super simple.
Yep.
Super simple, just a line or two.
Okay. So the next thing that we're going to look at is the settings.
Settings. All right. Let's see, we have a nice demo of settings, but let's walk through the slides before we do.
Yeah. So on the settings, you know, we have some guidelines around settings.
Yeah? Well, I'll do the slides on mine.
Oh.
Oh, they're yours.
What's up with you?
No, I was just watching. None of that matters.
Okay. So settings guidelines. One of the key things to think about settings is it is not a core requirement that your users come in and visit your settings. Hmm. You know, you need to think about your application flow that settings is generally an occasional.
By settings, we mean options, configurations.
Options, configurations, those kind of things. It's not normally a core flow that somebody is going to start up your application, swipe in from the right-hand side, select settings, and come in and set up a whole bunch of things. Mm-hmm. If it's part of your application setup environment, then you might want to think about a workflow as part of that application launch that guides them through some initial configuration if you need that. Your settings shouldn't be that UI. Now, you may be surfacing up settings that you took during the launch of your application
yeah.
in that settings fly out, but that's for occasional update, not mm-hmm. for a continual part of your workflow.
That's right. That's right.
You also want to think about setting up some smart baseline settings. You know, yeah. think about how your application is going
to
work.
Every user has to go do all these settings in order to make your application useful.
Yeah.
You may not have smart defaults.
Yeah. Make sure you put those things up. Think through those defaults so that they really make sense to your target user. You don't want to be keeping, as you say, changing it. You know, if you're talking about a whole bunch of content and somebody's starting it up as a sports app, then let's show the sports as a default.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, that's exactly right. Also, when you add these commands to the we call it the info pane.
Mm-hmm.
When you add the commands to that info pane, then they can only be so long. I mean, it's not a gigantic
yes.
thing. And so just as a assist to the user, we're going to keep those as short as we can. We're not going to say user preferences. We'll just say options, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you say user preferences?
Yeah, you can.
Sometimes you might have to,
yeah.
but generally speaking. And it's good to think about localization here as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Leave yourself plenty of room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the title isn't obvious and you need to use three or four words, rethink your title.
Yeah, yeah, that's mm-hmm. right. Use a thesaurus. That nice condescending thing to say.
Well,
all right, in Windows 8.0, in order to implement the setting flyout, it was quite a bit of work.
It's actually quite a bit of work. I mean, you yeah. had to create your own sort of controls and everything along those lines.
Everybody asked, where's the flyout control? Because JavaScript, WinJS developers,
yeah.
they had a flyout control, and this assumption was it was in parity, when in this case it wasn't.
Yes.
And so we didn't have a flyout control. There's a lot of custom work you would do to have a nice flyout. It wasn't that big of a deal, but it wasn't zero.
Yeah, and also it was kind of one of those things that you just had to keep doing it every time you
yeah.
wrote an app.
It's exhausting.
Because you always had one, and you're doing the same thing over and over again. It was crying out for encapsulation into a control.
It was.
In fact, many of us did.
Many of us did.
We actually created our own implementations. The challenge there is you started to get variation in the look and feel. It wasn't necessarily consistent. And so it kind of made sense that it would be pulled into the framework and provided.
I think we all knew eventually it would come. There was enough outcry that everybody wanted one, that we knew it was coming, as well as enough third party that we knew there was a gap to be done,
yeah.
be filled here.
And so, you know, fundamentally, the settings flyout control exists. It's a new root element.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you create it as a new item
That's right.
in your project. It implements the design guidelines, so you don't have to think about a lot of the header orientation, showing an icon, the
That's
back
right.
button, those kind of things.
Now the header of your settings and my settings look exactly the same because we use the same flyout.
Exactly.
Do it.
You know, it implements lightweight dismiss. You
mm-hmm.
know, if you click anywhere other than on there, it's going to move away nice and easily. It's already broken down into divisions of sort of header and content sections, so it's easy for you to add in those blocks of content. One of the nice things about it is you can also bring it up programmatically. You don't have to swipe it in as part of the settings charm.
Right, right.
So that's fairly cool if in you have those scenarios where you do need somebody to put in some settings before they need to proceed. That's perhaps an option, is you just pop it up. There's a limitation in that you can only have one shown at any time, and it's going to come in from the right-hand side.
Mm. Which is great because at least it helps with consistency.
Yep. And if you want to have it as part of the settings pane, then you actually need to do a little bit of code to add that as part of your settings pane, and we'll show that shortly.
We've got a great demo here. Let me go ahead and show
yep.
it. This is the settings demo. Like you said, we can invoke, so the user can go share, or no, they can go charms, settings,
mm-hmm.
which is great to have a single point of invocation for
yep.
every app no matter what. So don't do your own settings, don't do your own options, don't do your own preferences some other way.
Yeah, integrate.
Do this so that as users go from app to app, they have a consistency and familiarity. This certainly doesn't impact design at all. This is totally
mm-hmm.
about usability. So we have a button right here in the middle. It will invoke that UI. It doesn't show the, or does it show the form? No, this just shows the charm.
Yeah.
And so let me go ahead and run it. And nice job on this button, by the way. It looks really good.
It's awesome.
Before I do, I'm going to swipe over from the right just so you can see the charms. And I'm going to hit settings down here at the bottom. And when it pops up, you'll see I have permissions, which is there for every app, but
yep.
I also have options, which is our custom implementation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to click out of that so it's not there. The user doesn't have to go that route. You can create an easier workflow sometimes by just clicking that, and it's as if they click the settings charm for them, just like we would hope. Now, I can go up here. If I click permissions, it shows me permissions, but options, when I select it, this is a custom options. No, well, this is a settings flyout that's custom to our application. Mm-hmm. And you just threw in a couple of text boxes as an example of something we might do. There's no limit to what we can do here. We can do anything we need, as well as change the width. Sometimes it's the right thing that you need it to be slightly larger. I think the default is 363. You can also have...
It always seems such an arbitrary number.
Yeah, or it's not 363. Anyway, whatever it is, there are two arbitrary numbers you can pick from. And one of them is the one that's defaulted, and the other is in the MSDN guidelines that I can't remember right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it is actually convenient, you know, in case you need to have bigger. I've seen apps where they use the flyout to commit a purchase, you know, so it needs to be a little bit bigger for some of the extra fields that they have.
So why don't you quickly show the XAML for creating
Yeah, let's do. In fact, instead of showing what we have, let me just add another flyout. Okay. Is that all right with you? So here's the views for this. I'm going to go ahead and add, in this case, I'll say add new item. I'll filter by Windows Store here, go down to the settings flyout. I'm going to change the name to about. I mean, I think it'll be pretty stunning how simple it is to add this, you know. So here it is. If I go to the visual, you can see it looks just like about like you would want. Now, how do we add this to the list of commands? You do it in the app XAML.
Yep.
This is what we were thinking of earlier.
Yes, it is.
Right here in on window created, which I think is a great place to put it, here you create the settings command called for options, and then you add it to the list of commands. So you do this every time that the user selects something. So this isn't an expensive operation. If it ends up to be expensive, you're not doing it right.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just copy what you did because I want to do the same thing. Basically create, instead of an options command, we'll call it a
about.
Yeah, we'll call it about command. And I spelled it really well,
avout.
It's like devout in
a way.
Just
making up words.
All right, so here's the avout command. And in this case, the first thing that it's asking for is the key to separate them. I'll just call this two. It doesn't have to be anything specific. It's of type object. It's just so you can, if you have a lot of them, you can easily pull them out programmatically. And here I can say this is about, and it has a command. And here, instead of saying fly out is the sample settings, it's the about, it's views dot, views dot about. All right, so there it is. All I have to do is instantiate it, one, and two, call show. Everything else inside the flyout does it for me. Mm-hmm. It's already added to the commands list here. I will say that because I add it first, it's going to be above the options, which maybe not, you know, an about probably comes last, but that's all right. So no other change, right? Mm-hmm. No other change. All I want to do is reveal it. The logic inside the individual flyout is up to me or up to you and whatever you need in it. So I'll just do a quick build, deploy, and run. It'll have it right here. I can show the settings charm, and beautiful. There's about like I would want. I click it. It reveals it. And then just like if it was any other page, I would have logic and maybe a view model if I needed it. Mm-hmm. Maybe not. So simple to implement now. Just right click, add flyout, and you're ready to go.
Sounds great. So let's quickly review what we looked at.
Okay.
So we touched on the search contract and really revealed that that has changed in terms of the guidance around what we need to implement.
That's right. You know? Now we put the search box on the canvas.
Absolutely. We looked at the share contract and showed it's actually relatively trivial to implement being a share source.
Yeah, that's right.
Share target is a more complicated capability, but there is guidance available as a template that we can add to
our
project.
To don't forget, you want to add that in the capabilities of your app manifest in order to allow it.
Exactly. And we talked about the settings contract and
That's
the
right.
ability to leverage the new settings flyout control to quickly implement that type of UI.
It's a misnomer a little bit. The settings contract isn't a contract at all. It's just a settings, and you use the charm. You don't have to ask permission in your app manifest.
Absolutely. So that's covered this one. Let's have a quick 10-minute break.
Let's take a 10-minute break, come back, and cover module 5.
Module 5.
See ya.